This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And here we are with another episode of 19 Cats and Counting. I am certified cat behaviorist Rita Reimers. RitaReimers.com is my website. We are here with our favorite veterinarian, Dr. Kelly Cairns. She is, I'll let her tell you her certifications. I can never remember the whole thing. But first, we're going to go to a quick commercial and we'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with Dr. Kelly Cairns. And Dr. Kelly, you were telling me you're a board certified what?
I am a board certified small animal internal medicine specialist.
I would have never remembered all that.
For dogs and cats, with a special focus and interest on our kitties.
Love it. I love that. There's not enough people that focus in the pet industry on cats. I love dogs too. I was raised with a dog, but cats have been like the redheaded stepchildren until recently.
Well, trust our kitty loving friends that there's just a lot of veterinarians and veterinary technicians who do indeed focus on kitties. Our umbrella organization is called the Feline Veterinary Medical Association, it used to be called the American Association of Feline Practitioners. There's a lot of resources on the website for kitty pet parents and families.
Oh, I love that. I didn't even know about that. That's awesome. We're going to do something a little interesting. We're going to talk about three different topics and how they relate together. We're going to talk about outdoor cat stress, and also we're going to talk a little bit more about Pandora syndrome. I don't know if you all remember, but we talked about that a few shows ago. We're going to talk about how these all kind of interrelate. So, Dr. Kelly, do cats really need to go outside, first of all?
Oh, the million-dollar question. It is not universally true that cats need to go outside to be happy and satisfied. Cats really don't define their happiness the way humans do. And I think what's most important to understand is cats prioritize safety, predictability, and control, not freedom for the sake of freedom. So cats are different, right? Some cats do enjoy outdoor access as long as we make it safe for them. Others find it profoundly stressful. So I want to encourage everyone to not make a mistake to assume that what looks like enriching and feels good to us is going to uniformly feel good to a kitty. Because remember, stress can exist even when that cat looks normal.
That's so true. I know the cats that I have that have been outdoor kitties, they want no part of it. They're like, I know it's out there, I'm done, right? So just thinking about cats being outside, there's so many things that can cause them stress. And our indoor cats, too, when they see those outside cats. So stress can be really subtle in cats. So how do we notice that our cats are suffering some kind of stress or anxiety?
Yeah, it's a really great point, Rita. Cats are experts at masking stress and pain. And stress can show up in really subtle ways. So it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all approach for every cat, because every cat's unique. But sometimes it may just be a change in temperament. Maybe the cat is quieter. Maybe the cat is irritable. Maybe there's a hiding behavior or a change in the patterns of grooming or even litter box changes. These things sometimes get labeled as behavioral problems. They could be medical problems. They could be signs of stress.
Yeah, it's really hard sometimes to tell the difference between a medical issue and the stress. But My first recommendation is always, if you're in doubt, go to your veterinarian, get that checkup, get peace of mind. Or if it is a medical issue, get that cleared up. And then you still might need to tackle the behavior issues because by then they could be pretty much ingrained. Speaking about outdoor cats, I know we'll get to the next question in a minute. I had a client last week. She just adopted a kitten that was found outside. Her adult cat goes outside. So she asked me, this cat's now 3 months. When can the new cat go outside? I wanted to say never. But I told her what I said, and I want to know if I was right. If you really want her to go outside, you know, she's already spayed. Put her on a harness first before you let her go. You know, she's new to the area. I would not trust that she would stay in the territory and like find her way home. But I know they say cats have something in their head where they know where they belong. Is that true?
You know, I do think to some degree that they tend to orient where they're at and know how to find their way home. You know, I think what's important to understand is when we think about safety for our cats, undoubtedly, we've got abundant data telling us that if a cat has a mixed lifestyle, goes outside at all with reasonable frequency, it dramatically decreases their lifespan. So the studies show us that outdoor cats live between 2 and 5 years because there's all of those increased hazards, traffic, predators, exposure to other diseases, and just the weather, right? The elements. Whereas an indoor-only cat will live to be, many estimates say 12 to 18 plus years of age.
Yeah, I have a 20-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of cats can reach into their 20s with good care and a little bit of, you know, genetic luck with chronic diseases. So I think your point, though, is a good one, is if someone is thinking their cat might want to go outside with the points we've already raised, you should probably test that in a way that is safe for the cat. I like the idea of a harness. I like the idea of a stroller. There's cat strollers, you know, that have the, so they're enclosed. Let's see how your cat reacts to that, to even figure out if your cat seems to love that or if your cat thinks that's the zombie apocalypse. And then I also know that there are ways. I have lots of friends and colleagues who have created permanent outdoor enclosures for their cats. So their cats can freely go in and out, and they still are protected from some of the elements. Now, disease can still get in, little bugs and mosquitoes, but predators and traffic would no longer be concerned.
If you're going to have a cat go outside, even in an enclosure, make sure you're up on all those vaccines too.
100%. And you know what I say, Rita, even if your cat is indoor only, be up to date on those vaccines. Because we don't live in a bubble in the house. Things get in.
I had bats in my house, so you never know when something might come up, right? Bats, not always, but typically they're associated with rabies, so you don't want to take that chance, right? So let's talk about how Pandora syndrome comes into play here with cats going outside, coming back in, smelling a little different. Maybe like in this client's case, the little one doesn't go outside yet. The big one does. What is Pandora syndrome, first of all?
Yeah. So whenever we use the word syndrome, it means it's complicated and multifactorial. But there is a lot of evidence that Pandora syndrome is a real thing in the cat. So first, let's just remind ourselves that cats are not small dogs in amazing, delightful ways. They have very unique physiology that's very different from other species. In general, the cat's nervous system seems to be wired a little differently than other species. Some cats, more than other cats, are more predisposed to have a high level of whole cat stress response as a disorder. These cats, their nervous system is kind of stuck in the on mode, and that makes them more predisposed to problems, including inflammation and immune system dysregulation, okay? And so there are studies that are ongoing to determine why. Again, it's not just one hormone, one chemical. It's a complex interaction of a lot of hormones and things in the cat's body. These cats' nervous system is always stuck in on, kind of fight or flight mode. Okay. So cats that have Pandora syndrome, they are more susceptible when they're stressed for any reason to see clusters of problems in a lot of organ systems. We could see inflammation and dysregulation in the urinary system, and bladder problems, the gut, GI disease, chronic vomiting. These cats can have skin issues. They can have anxiety. So I could go on, and I'm happy to unpack this with you more. However, if you then think about a cat that does have kind of hyperactivated nervous system. And now that cat is going outside and is stressed about that. There's predators, there's things that are unknown outside. We could see an exacerbation of those symptoms for those cats.
I used to live in an apartment complex, and there were certain people that would, you know, let their cats wander. Now, the apartment complex is around is parking lot. I would be petrified. To me, it's like taking your toddler, putting him outside and saying, okay, I'm going to work, right? You wouldn't do that. Why would you do that to your cat? So how else can Pandora syndrome can come into play?
Yeah, so the most commonly recognized organ that will be impacted by Pandora syndrome is the bladder. Its urinary signs are the big thing that we see that is recognized most often. And so what we will see is it's a stress cat that has this hyperactivation of their nervous system. And there's all of these interactions of molecules and receptors binding in the urinary bladder. And they express that through the symptoms that show up in the bladder. And so what the medical term for this phenomenon in the bladder is called chronic sterile interstitial cystitis. Now, that's a lot of words.
It is.
What happens is the bladder lining is inflamed and very painful for the cat. And so, and there's no infection going on. There's not a bacterial urinary tract infection. It is literally what's called sterile inflammation. It's the nervous system doing this. And so the cat will frequently have painful, irritative voidings. The cat is vocalizing, going to the litter box a lot, only peeing little bits frequently, a lot of times straining, blood. Again, it's very painful. So that prompts the kitty to go to the veterinarian for evaluation. Your vet is going to rule out things that are medical that can cause that. Stones, infections, if your kitty's older, masses or tumors. But in a younger cat, the most common thing that is going to cause this is an interstitial sterile cystitis, which basically means Pandora syndrome is causing these problems in the bladder.
And that can come up anytime a cat is stressed or has been under stress for a prolonged period of time. Is there any treatment for that?
Great question, Rita. So there is definitely treatment. There's short term when the cat is having a flare up, because if a kitty gets this, once a kitty that gets this, always a kitty that gets this. So short term, there are some medications your vet will likely recommend to help kind of decrease pain management, decrease spasmings in the urinary bladder. But really the key to success to try to prevent or limit how many times the kitty gets these episodes and how bad they are when the kitty does get them is what's called multimodal environment enrichment, or MIMO for short. It's an acronym. And so your vet will have you fill out a questionnaire and work with you. There's some great resources online here also that will help you figure out what things might be stressing your cat out, that determine what you do in the environment to minimize stress and cause enrichment for that cat in a good way. So it could be a lot of things. It could be related to the types of litter boxes, the number, where you're putting the litter boxes. What stresses your cat out? Is it other people? Is it other cats in the house? Is it dogs? So it really is getting to the root of what the stress is to determine what you modify in the environment to decrease the stress. That's the treatment.
What do you think of over-the-counter PEA, not P, but I can't pronounce it. It's this long, it's a natural occurring citric acid thing. I know the two crazy cat ladies sell it. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's supposed to help with inflammation. And I know I use it with my cats as it helps all different types of inflammation. Where PEA. It's a natural occurring fatty acid compound found in plants and animals. It's supposed to help with all kinds of things, including, it's not listed here, but it can be used for interstitial cystitis, among other things. So I was just curious what you thought about that. Maybe we can pick that up on the next.
Yeah, I don't have any direct experience with that. What I would say with any supplement is that remember that they're not regulated like true drugs are. So they're not all created equal. So even if we look at a supplement, say, for example, the natural compounds in cranberry that are touted to be helpful for people too when they've got cystitis, that if you've got 20 supplements that all say they have that in there, they're not all going to be the same with even having that compound in there. And if they have it, the quality of that compound and the concentration of that compound. So any sort of, I love supplements. I love nutraceuticals. There's some great brands and providers out there. You really have to be savvy and educated and really work with your veterinarian to determine, are there any studies to show safety and efficacy for those supplements and who's making the supplement? That's because that's the big key, right? That is going to be the big key. The one that you mentioned, P for cats, I'm not familiar with, so I don't have any specific evidence-based opinion about it. Definitely the compound that's in there, it's a naturally occurring fatty acid that may help reduce inflammation and support normal immune responses. So talked about as potentially decreasing inflammation in conditions like cystitis that cats can get, as well as allergies, skin problems, arthritis, a variety of different conditions. But I am not familiar with that specific supplement.
It's actually, they resell it. It's actually made by Emily Morgan. I think she's a veterinarian.
My understanding on just a quick check is it's generally well tolerated with few known side effects, which doesn't inherently mean it's proven to work. But when in doubt, always consult with your veterinarian.
Definitely. Before you give them anything over the counter, that's really good advice. Let's take a quick break for our sponsor, and we'll be back with a lot more information, stress in cats, and Pandora syndrome. We'll be right back.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell she was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's carnivora.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with 19 Cats and Counting, Dr. Kelly Cairns, and I am Rita Reimers, Certified Cat Behaviorist. We're talking about outdoor cats, stress, and Pandora syndrome, and they can all go together at times. I also want to talk about, I know it's not on the questions we discussed, but I wanted to talk about non-feline recognition syndrome. Have you heard about that? Yeah, because that can be caused by cats going in and out or going to the vet and coming back. And that's a stressor.
Have you seen much of that in your behavior practice?
I have. Definitely have.
Yeah.
So let's tell people what that is.
Sure. So non-feline recognition syndrome is when a cat kind of loses recognition or forgets another animal that it previously was aware of. So maybe it's a companion cat and it smells differently, or they've been separated for reasons, you know, one's been at a vet visit or boarding or grooming, or there's just been a change in a routine. Failure to recognize scent can be a big component in this because cats are such a scent-based animal. And so I've definitely seen it with my cats over the years, if one has been gone for a reason, that they, on the reintroduction, there's a little bit of a, oh, who are you, buddy? Until they kind of start smelling back like their normal self. What's been your experience with it?
Well, especially when one cat has been to the vet, maybe to get spayed or neutered. So they've actually had surgery and they come back and they really smell different because they've been at the vet for a few hours. They've been under anesthesia for a spay. And maybe there's dogs in there that come back smelling like that. And the OG cats are like, what is that smell? I don't know you. Get away from me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I always recommend people like rub their cat down with a towel before you take them to the vet or grooming or what have you. when he comes back, redistribute his original scent on him. And that will help cut down some of that feline non-recognition syndrome.
Yeah, I think those are great tips. I also have found success with gradual reintroduction, you know, so maybe that cat just sits in the carrier for a little bit and the other cats can smell around and, you know, versus just kind of dump the cat out with the other cats and go on your way.
Yeah, a lot of people do that. Some cats aren't affected by it, but if you have just two cats, if you can take them to the vet at the same time, that helps eliminate some of that. But not everybody. Could you see me with 16 cats? I don't think they'd all fit in my car. Oh, wow. So we already talked about this, I think, when you look at outdoor cats through the Pandora syndrome lens. What changes about how we think of outdoor life?
Well, again, I think, you know, for me, it all comes back to what we started with, that what we think might be delightful could be us projecting that onto our cat, right? So it's a myth that all cats really want to be outside. Some cats do. Some cats maybe enjoy being outside a little bit. We talked a little bit about how to do it safely, but also remember that different cats have different level of tolerance for stress. And so when I think about Pandora syndrome, if you know you have a cat that does have kind of a hyperactivated neurologic system, they're always a little bit stressed out. Maybe your vet has told you that your cat does have this and your cat's had episodes of cystitis. My opinion is that the unpredictability of outdoor life and the extra stresses, the lack of control, the territory conflict, everything that comes with that could then be a risk factor for additional episodes of medical problems related to Pandora syndrome. So I think it really just kind of, for me, reframes outdoor access as really it's cat specific. It's not good. It's not bad. You got to look at what the cat likes. You got to look at what the cat's body can tolerate with all of the potential risks of doing it.
I do think the one client I spoke with recently, she kind of forced her cat to go outside because then I asked a follow-up question, are there other cats outside? Yeah, and she hates them. So why do you make her go outside? To me, she's under chronic stress.
Yeah.
Because of those other cats. That's just my opinion. So how can we make it so our cats have a less stressful life when they're indoors? Like, how can we enrich their environment?
For me, it all comes back to every cat is unique and every household is unique. So I think the first thing is there's not a one-size-fits-all approach. So I would say that the same things that you would need to do if your cat's been diagnosed with Pandora syndrome and now you're working with your vet, you're filling out questionnaires to figure out how to reduce stress, I think that proactive kitty parents can actually think about those same questions. So Ohio State University has a great website. It's the Indoor Cat Initiative that you can go to, or indoorpet.osu.edu. It's all one word, Indoor Pet. You know, the International Society of Feline Medicine is iCatCare, all one word, .org. Of course, Feline Veterinary Medical Association has a lot of resources of what to think about and the questions to ask yourself to better kind of fine tune what things stress your cat out. You know, I've had cats over the years, I'm sure you have, Rita, that really enjoy being by themselves.
Mm-hmm. I have a few of those here.
They don't want another cat. They just don't. And then there's cats that really seem lonely, mm-hmm. and they want to be around other cats. Some cats don't want to be around dogs. Some cats are going to sleep on top of the dog.
I love that.
Right. Some cats like kids. Some cats, if there's too much frenetic activity with a lot of kids in the house, it stresses them out. So I think you have to start with that foundation and then build your enrichment around that, you know, around what you're going to do, you know, what kind of safe space is going to be safe for your cat. I'll tell you what I did for my cat. Oh, she cares. My 13-year-old fat, delightful orange cat. I'm trying to get him to lose weight. It's being jangled.
I'm very partial to orange cats.
I know. Well, you know, he's down to being an only cat. His pair bond litter mate did die a few years ago from cancer. And we're being very intentional about if we reintroduce another cat, because again, how do we know it's going to be the right person, cat person for that, my cat, the right friend. But we did a bunch of enrichment for his holiday presents. And actually, I put together one of those cat caves out of cardboard that you can buy that have the vertical surfaces of scratching, and then he goes inside. And there's things that dangle off, and he's really enjoying that. It's giving him a place that is his own in a nook.
Yeah, cats that get bored, that's stressful for them too, especially if they're used to having another feline playmate. Now, let me talk about in your situation or somebody who's in a similar situation. How do you decide, does my cat need another cat in his life?
I think it's hard.
Yeah, it's really hard. And even if you think your cat does, it doesn't mean that right away there's going to be acceptance. There's still going to be a period of introduction, maybe some hissing, a little slapping back and forth, because that's how cats kind of set their hierarchy, right? And claim territory. There's going to be that.
Yeah. If you have an adult or a senior cat, I'm really curious to get, as a behavior expert, to get your opinion here. But my experience has been that it can be more challenging to put together a male and a female when they're both older versus same gender. I've had a lot of bad luck with a mature adult female or senior female wanting to be then with a male. Again, in the situation where they're all spayed and neutered, I don't know what it is. They just get, I don't know, when they get older. Have you found that there's tolerance is variable related to the gender?
Well, now that I think about it, that's probably true. Larry came into our life about 3 years ago. He was an outdoor. He's trapped in a spay neuter, and he had FIV, so he couldn't be returned. And he did start palling around with the male cats. He doesn't really pal around with the females. About a week before that, I took in Lulu, who's a very ornery female. And yeah, she's very picky about who she'll let come in her room. She won't come downstairs, even though she could. But she does tend to gravitate more towards Teddy Bear, who's a female. Sometimes she'll tolerate Dexter, but that's been 3 years in the making. So yeah, there might be some truth to that. I don't think there's been studies.
I don't know. I'm not seeing any studies bearing it out. But we're really being intentional right now about whether or not we do bring another adult cat into the house.
For sure.
I think there'd have to be some sort of acclimation period and a period too. It's what I always recommend to folks is, you know, the shelter, whomever you're getting the cat from, are you able to try it out just to see how that initial contact goes, to see if they're going to be a good fit for one another.
Yeah, do some fostering. There's a lot of foster to adopt out there. So if you're fostering a cat and you find he's blending in with your household or she's blending in with your household, that you could adopt the kitty. And if not, then the cat will, you know, still be up for adoption from somebody else. I think that's a good way to start it off. Another thing I would caution about is bringing in a kitten with older cats. I've done it, but I have, you know, various ages. But I notice that, like, when I bring in a kitten, the ones that are like 12, 14, they don't want any part of the kitten. Till the cat grows up a little bit. When he's about 2 or 3, then they start interacting. But those high octane energy kittens with older cats, like, don't mix very well.
Yeah, true.
Oh, so what are some of the red flags that you notice when a cat maybe is feeling a little more stressed?
So many. I'm sure you've also experienced, there's just so many different
signs. Hiding is one.
It's not just one. It's not one size fits all approach, but really any sort of behavioral change, whether it's, again, hiding or being more agitated and irritable, you know, to me is a big sign. Again, you always want to go to your vet, rule out something medical, but that can be a big sign of stress. And any change in normal appetite, eating behavior, socialization pattern of behavior, urinary and defecation behavior. Again, none of these things are specific for stress. We always, always need to rule out medical conditions, but they are all red flags for me that we need to investigate, especially if there's been a recent change in the dynamics of the household.
Right. And any kind of change, I mean, somebody new entering the household, your kids going away to college and not being there, that's a big one. People don't think about that, that maybe they were really bonded to your child and now they're not there. Other animals passing away. And I've been through that. And so have you, obviously. That can be stressful. And also, here's a big one. Have enough litter boxes, okay? If there's one litter box and you've got 4 cats, that's not good. And there's going to be stress and there's going to be litter box bullying too.
Well, I'll tell you what, the old mantra in veterinary school is, I think they still teach this. I went a long time ago.
Plus
is
one,
N
yes.
N plus one. Yeah. So the number of cats you have is N plus one is the number of boxes you should have. Because even if you only have one cat, cats often prefer, if given a choice,
yeah, they do,
to urinate and defecate in different boxes. So, you know, if, again, it can be challenging. I mean, if, you know, when I had 6 cats, I can't tell you I had 7 litter boxes.
I have
where
15,
do you put them
so,
all?
Yeah.
But I think
15 litter boxes for 16 cats. I'm not quite N plus one.
You are amazing. Wow, that is impressive. That is impressive for sure, Rita. You do what you can, do your best. And then, of course, scooping the boxes very frequently, no matter how many you have. But that's
definitely,
you know, that can be a big source of stress. And I think you also touched on if there's been a loss of another cat in the house, I really want to make sure folks don't underestimate the impact that has on the other cats. You know, I think they need closure too. I mean, I will share with folks, I've always, if a cat of ours has passed at the veterinary hospital, I've always brought the cat home to allow the other cats to sniff that cat.
I had a cat, well, if you've read my book, Sadie's Heart, my Sadie passed away. She had ventral septal defect. She passed away at home. We weren't expecting it. And she was very bonded to Trouble, another one of my cats. And he was hiding in the closet. They probably were together. She had a kitty heart attack is what happened, because the stabilization with the ventral septal defect, just it wasn't stable anymore. He never was the same after that. So sometimes it can really affect a cat's personality permanently.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's really sad. So if there's one thing you want cat owners to really learn from our conversation, what do you think it would be?
Well, you know, we've talked about a lot of different related topics. I think it is to really understand that there's a lot of dangers and risks to your cat going outside, and that it's not intrinsically less stressful for them either. And so please really think about it intentionally. If you really think your cat wants to go outside and you've tested it and they're dying to go outside, you've done all the things we've talked about, I would really encourage people to find a way to make that safe, to think about how you can do an enclosure. You know, not everybody's house will allow for that, but putting your cat outside unattended is going to create major risks of trauma, of infectious disease, you know, of predators. And so I be aware, be balanced, and don't just automatically assume that your cat wants to go outside. There's kind of boxes to check before you get there. I recommend, like many groups do, that cats should be inside. A lot of groups that do recommend that cats should be inside.
I believe that too. But I used to live in LA, and there's coyotes all over the place. My cats did not go outside, and they still don't. But every now and then I'd see a poster, lost cat, and I'd think, oh, well, you're not going to get that cat back because he was probably eaten. And I talked to some people here in the Carolinas too. They live maybe up in the mountains, and there's bobcats. They still let their cats go outside. Why? They don't need it. If you need ideas for catification too, visit housepanther.com, Kate Benjamin. She also wrote a book with Jackson Galaxy, Catification and Catify to Satisfy. Both are excellent books. And her website gives some great ideas of how you can catify your home.
Great. Love it. Catify your home, which again, so environment, and that's what we're talking about, catify your home. It is one of the most powerful tools we actually have in feline medicine.
Agreed.
It helps their quality of life. It helps how they feel. It helps how they heal. Because stress matters.
Definitely.
As much as diet and medication.
I can't thank you enough for coming on and talking about this. I stress to so many people to please keep your cats inside. I think they don't think about a lot of these potential risks and how it can affect how your cats behave indoors too. Well, I hope you come back again. We have you on like every month or so, I think.
Of course.
And I love that. You know, there's things I know or that I've experienced anecdotally that I love that you can corroborate with medical evidence. It's awesome.
I feel the same way. I'll look forward to the next one.
Thank you so much. And of course, I have to thank Mark Winter for giving me this spot on Pet Life Radio. I will be forever grateful. And until next time, just remember that every day is Catter Day. We'll see you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.